Catholic Answers Live. My name is Chris Check. I am president of Catholic Answers, sitting in for Cy Kellett. Your usual host, Cy, is a little under the weather still and will be very grateful for your prayers. And so I will be with you for the next 2 hours. And if Cy is still down on Friday, I'll be with you on Friday as well. My colleague, Dave Matheson, director of development, will be in this chair tomorrow. So Chris Check sitting in for Cy Kellett. The show is Catholic Answers Live. The number to talk to our guest today, 888-318-7884. Again, 888-318-7884, 888-31-TRUTH to talk to our guest, or I should say guests today. We are especially blessed for the next 2 hours to have in studio with us today two very dear friends of mine, dear San Diego friends, and two of the top legal minds in the English-speaking, well, let's just say the world, gentlemen. Can we just say that? Chuck Lemandry, welcome. Chuck Lemandry.
Glad to be here. Thanks for having me, Chris.
We're very happy to have you back. And his colleague, Paul Jonah.
Great to be here. Thanks, Chris.
Paul is also, I should say, a member of the Board of Trustees of Catholic Answers. I think although you have to have your first meeting, right?
And
then that's official.
Yes.
Right? Very good. So recently joined or will be joining us. Chuck and Paul are partners in Jonah and, Lemandry and Jonah.
Okay.
Let me get that. And Lemandry and Jonah here, civil litigators here in San Diego. And then, of course, you are, what's the word, special counsel to?
Thomas More Society.
The Thomas More Society. Right. And those guys are based out of
Chicago. Is a home base, right?
Yeah.
But they're everywhere.
Yeah. So I mean, although you guys do quite a bit of, is the correct word, civil litigation here in San Diego, but you're... Your notoriety, depending on which side of things you're on, I guess your fame derives in large part for the work that you all do in religious liberty.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah. Right. Yeah, very good. And that's what we'll be wanting to talk about today. 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884, 888-31-TRUTH. Supreme Court, abortion, and religious liberty. And of course, gentlemen, this is very much in the news right now and is likely to stay in the news for a considerable amount of time. And in fact, I want to come back to that question of how long it's likely to stay in the news. So let's be thinking about that, because there are election implications here, political implications. But let me get your opinion on something broad here to begin with. We hear, and I say this myself, that This battle, which we have had a significant victory, Chuck, as you were saying when we were visiting before the show, a significant victory and one that we really need to be rejoicing in, that this is a cultural victory, and without a sufficient cultural willingness, let's say, then the political or the legal victory does not come. And yet, we have to understand that this legal victory is essential. And by the way, also if you would agree with me or not, in influencing the culture now as we go forward. What
exactly.
do you think? What do you think, Chuck?
No, it's true. The culture influences the law to a certain extent, because lawyers, judges live in society with everybody else. But also the law influences the culture. It's kind of a symbiotic relationship. And oftentimes, for better or worse, Chris, what becomes legal becomes normative. We saw that with gay marriage, for example. Nobody would have thought that a year after the Obergefell decision making same-sex marriage legal, everybody would be talking about the whole transgender movement. But I think they needed to have the uncoupling of gender from marriage to get to that point where that could be considered fairly widespread among certain segments of the population. But also, when something becomes embodied in law, it sometimes gives a false impression that the great majority of people have accepted it. And that's not always true. Sometimes the minority is able to get their will through the courts that they can't do through the democratic process, whereas they can't get the state legislatures or Congress, for example, to pass gay marriage, which is what they should have done. But instead, they go to the Supreme Court, where you have nine unelected people that effectively overturn the will of two out of every three Americans have voted, for example, on the gay marriage issue. Similarly with abortion, most all the states at the time Roe v. Wade was passed in 1973 had restrictions on abortion. But yet again, nine unelected judges with no basis in the Constitution struck down all of those laws, and then it kind of changes the culture. But even now, through the hard work of the pro-life movement and the churches, so many people of goodwill, so many millions of prayers, has brought about a change, but not just a change in the law. There was a change in a lot of minds and hearts. The majority of people in America were not in favor of abortion for the full 9 months, or what we basically have in places like California and New York. In 26 states, did join Mississippi in wanting to strike down Roe v. Wade. So again, there was the cultural movement in place for the justices to be able to do this now, where it would have been probably more difficult 10, 20 years ago.
I want to hear from you as well, Paul, on this particular point, and just kind of keep it up here for a second. 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884, to talk to our guests. So, Chuck, you mentioned this reality that the cultural influences the law influences the culture, and then the way that the law can influence the culture is that we tend to think that something that has been legally sanctioned, if you will, or even codified, is normative in human behavior, or accepted as normative in human behavior, when in fact it's not. But would you say, and because I feel like as if I'm guilty of this myself, would you not say, gentlemen, that a lot of us had come to one degree or another sort of been resigned to the reality of abortion? I'll go on record saying I'm surprised, I'm joyfully surprised by the events of the last week. I did not expect this, and so even if many people knew, yeah, taking the life of an unborn baby is homicide, an innocent life, that's homicide. But a lot of us have just kind of gotten accustomed to living with it. And so one of the things that I think is especially meritorious about this decision is that it's a reminder to all of us, don't stop fighting, right? Even if we've all kind of gotten accustomed to this and we're inured to it. Don't give up. Don't stop fighting. Right?
Absolutely. And I certainly learned that, you know, on my first forays into the religious liberty battles with my work on the Mount Soledad Cross case in California. I was involved for 12 years, but that case went on for 27 years. So the last man standing
oftentimes
wins.
Yeah, well, I want to interrupt here because you've been prosecuting that. Give us a little background on that month, because everybody in San Diego knows about the Mount Sinai Cross. But
well, I only use it as an example of how important it is not to give up.
I mean,
is this the longest
piece of litigation in American history, or something?
Well, actually, Tom Brekka, we tried each other because he took the Shiler case, which was an abortion case, to the Supreme Court three times, and it lasted 28 years. The Mount Soledad Cross case was 27 years. So I said, if I had known he had that record, I would have found a way to keep the Mount Soledad Cross case going. Of course, I'm joking. But the Mount Soledad Cross is a memorial to veterans in San Diego, one of the most beautiful vantage points overlooking downtown the Pacific Ocean, one of those frequently visited spots in San Diego. A lot of people are engaged and married up there. This atheist, Philip Paulson, came in 1989, and in as much as the memorial is a large cross, it's 54-foot cross. I may have the actual height wrong. I think it's that high on the platform. But regardless, it's visible from multiple vantage points in the county. Philip Paulson said he was offended by it because he's an atheist, and it was on public property, state parkland. And he said, regardless of whether you call it a war memorial, it should not be on public property. So he filed a lawsuit, and it went up and down the state and federal courts. In the 12 years I was involved, we went up to the California Supreme Court, up to the United States Supreme Court. It was three acts of Congress. All levels of government were involved. And we had to fight it politically. We had to fight it legally in the courts. And we had to fight it in the court of public opinion by doing programs like this, because the people needed to be aware what was going on and how their rights were at stake. And then they contacted their politicians and said, this is not what we want. So although we were losing all the legal battles, when I finally got involved in 2004 because the people contacted the politicians and the local Republican congressmen, who are all veterans, got a law passed through Congress making it a federal memorial, and that changed the whole landscape. But my point being, and now, of course, the memorial is intact and hopefully will stay that way for all time. There's not going to be any more legal challenges. But we had to switch strategies. We had to keep praying. I mean, I could tell you about miraculous things that went on in the case along the way. Sometimes in your darkest hour, God will show his greatest glory by stepping in and making it clear that's him acting, because it could not have happened by human means alone. I'm talking about Congress passing laws at the 11th hour that weren't even scheduled in the case of Mount Soledad Cross, when people were praying a miraculous novena, things of that nature, and the United States Supreme Court issuing a very rare stay when the case wasn't even before them yet. So, yes, it's very important that people realize we're in it in the long haul. And the other big lesson that I learned, which is a good thing coming out of these culture wars, is people of different faiths need to work together for their common purpose. And I feel in my heart, particularly in that case, but also on Proposition 8, the marriage cases, it pleases God when people of different religions are working together to pursue a common end for a common good, such as God ordained in the institution of marriage, or in this case, the protection of life. So we need that unity of purpose, and we need that perseverance. And then ultimately, as Archbishop Corleone said when we won the Prop 8 election in California, it's all going to be done for the glory of God, and he'll bless it.
Paul, let me bring you in here. 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884, 888-31-TRUTH. Following up on this question of the relationship between the law and the culture, the symbiotic relationship, as Chuck describes it, it seems to me that probably across I feel very self-conscious not being a legal person talking to two lawyers, because I know I'm not going to use the correct vocabulary. But let's just say, across all aspects of the law, there is going to be this relationship between culture and the law. But it seems to me to be especially obvious and especially prevalent in the kind of work that you and Chuck do with respect to things that fall within two categories, and they're related, of course, generally the religious liberty questions, but simply the questions of what is the moral code by which human persons are going to live. And I've always kind of been on the side of things that say, our law reflects what we think our moral code is. But I'm very happy to be educated in the last week here that this case and others can say, no. Our law goes back to a tradition that precedes by many, many generations and centuries the popular whims of of the people today. So the law kind of provides some constant, right?
Well, in the case of Dobbs, as everyone knows by now, what the majority said is that the Constitution is silent on the issue of abortion. So basically, the Supreme Court should have never gotten into this mess in the first place. I think with a lot of the work that we do, it seems like, as Chuck was saying, courts are increasingly injecting themselves into issues that really don't concern them. I mean, so you have courts stopping the democratic process basically undoing the will of the people in the case of not only abortion, but also gay marriage and a lot of other issues. And so a lot of these religious liberty cases also are an example of, the left or people organized on this other side trying to use the courts to manipulate the law, really. So a lot of what you're seeing with Dobbs and with other recent cases are just courts saying this is not where we belong and sort of stepping out of that that dynamic. And a lot, as to what Chuck was saying too, the role that God played obviously in every aspect of what's going on. But interestingly, with this, the change of the composition of the court obviously is the key thing that allowed this to happen, with Justice Ginsburg being replaced and with President Trump being able to appoint two Supreme Court justices who weren't just conservative, but they were solid in the sense that they actually had the will to you know, see through the threats and intimidation and do the right thing, because we've had a number of conservative appointees to the court who just were unable to do that in 1993, I think, in Planned Parenthood versus Casey. They had the opportunity. We had a majority on the court back then, and they also unfortunately upheld Roe back then. So there's a lot going on with that, and but yeah, it's a sort of unrelated point, but I wanted to mention that too.
It's well worth it. 888-318-7884. My friends, we're going to take a short break. Before we do, I want to remind everyone that the Catholic Answers Conference is coming up at the end of September. CatholicAnswersConference.com. Our special guest, Bishop Papraki of the Diocese of Springfield, Illinois. Our topic, I am with you always, the Eucharist, real presence. All of us needs to be better at defending the central doctrine of our faith. And more than that, my friends, we need to draw closer to Jesus Christ in the Eucharist. And that is the focus, the effort, the intention, the mission, if you will, of this year's conference here in San Diego, CatholicAnswersConference.com. Here's the good news. You can save $50 on your ticket when you go to CatholicAnswers.com and register. That's $50. Enter the promo code early. Here's the not so good news. The early bird offer ends at midnight on Friday. I think that's probably midnight Hawaii time. So I don't know if that gives you more time or not, depending where you are. But enter the code early. Go to CatholicAnswersConference.com. Both of you gentlemen have been to our conference. You can just tell everybody what an awesome time it is and what a bargain it is, actually.
Absolutely.
Yeah. CatholicAnswersConference.com, right back after this.
Hang on. Catholic Answers Live will return in a moment.
Are you a coffee drinker? If so, you can now enjoy a coffee roasted to perfection by the Carmelite monks of Wyoming. Delicious mystic monk coffee is roasted and prepared by monks in a hidden cloistered monastery and is available in over 25 varieties. All mystic monk coffees are works of perfection and labors of love. For more information on how to purchase mystic monk coffee, visit mysticmonkcoffee.com. That's mysticmonkcoffee.com.
Saints are the heroes of the Catholic faith. They serve as examples for all Catholics, showing us how to lead a more satisfying, more spiritual life in communion with our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. View our comprehensive documentation of saints who serve as theologians and doctors of the Church. It's easy. Visit EWTN.com and click Catholicism. EWTN, the Global Catholic Network.
My name is Christopher Check. I am president of Catholic Answers, sitting in for your usual, wiser, better-looking, more articulate host, Cy Kellett, who is under the weather. We hope we'll be back in this chair Friday. If not Friday, then early next week. Keep Cy in your prayers. 888-318-7884. We are talking this hour and next hour about the Supreme Court, abortion, and religious liberty in light of the recent Dobbs decision. And with me to discuss these two topics, there are no more qualified men in the country. And thanks be to God, they both live here in San Diego. Chuck Lemandry and Paul Jonah, who are partners at Lemandry and Jonah, where they do civil litigation here in San Diego, but are known throughout the country and the legal world for the good work that they do in defense of the moral law and religious liberties. Welcome, gentlemen. Happy to have you. Chuck, you were making a point during the break there to kind of close off the idea, the opening bit of our conversation with respect to the relationship between the law and the culture.
Sure. And just following up on two good points Paul was making. One, it reminds me of you oftentimes hear that you can't legislate morality. And the response is, of course you can. Most important laws reflect someone's sense of morality or their worldview. And in fact, one of the main reasons Justice Alito, who was the one who was the author of the Dobbs' decision came out last Friday, that they ruled the way they did, because he said since abortion is not anywhere in the Constitution, it should go back to the people's elective elected representatives in the states. So that being the case, it makes perfect sense that this decision happened the way it did, when it did. And you got to give credit where it is due. President Trump did appoint three good pro-life judges or justices on the U.S. Supreme Court, as he said that he would. Now, the decision by Justice Alito was by a justice that predated President Trump, but he needed those additional votes. And, of course, probably the strongest justice on the court, giving his concurring opinion, was Justice Thomas, who also predated President Trump. But without those three appointments by President Trump, especially Amy Coney Barrett replacing Justice Ginsburg, this could not and would not have happened. So to answer your question as to why it took 50 years, we just had the right convergence of circumstances at the right time. I think more people are willing to accept it. Again, 26 states were in favor of it, and we had the right justices who did the right thing by the grace of God.
You know, you all are familiar with San Diego County, and so we're kind of here in East County. And if you go one town over, it's Lakeside, where they have the rodeo.
Right.
So it's almost like Texas over there. And I was driving over there the other day, and there was a fellow with his Ford F-150, and on the back he had a bumper sticker, and it said, "Trump plus Jesus equals saved babies' lives." So, I mean, and I totally agree with you, Chuck, about giving credit where it's due. And I know that there are Catholics and even, I don't know, what we would say faithful or Orthodox Catholics who just, they start to foam at the mouth when they hear President Trump. And I would just be very grateful if they could say, all right, very well, I disagree with him on this point, or maybe the guy didn't lead a moral life, although I'd like to know a politician in my memory who has this sort of thing, but nonetheless, can we acknowledge he did what he do? And then I would ask you, and you all would know because of the experience with the court. I also imagine not only the reality of the votes there, but it's got to be kind of the culture now on the court. There's sort of a reinforced feeling of goodwill and good cheer and fraternity in that sense. Yeah,
absolutely. And the Supreme Court kind of leads the way. When Paul and I handled the church cases, and we're fortunate to be on the front lines in reopening all the churches in California through a favorable decision at the U.S. Supreme Court. Once we got that decision, all the other courts, including the Ninth Circuit, which didn't want to go our way at all, had to fall into line. And it does affect people's perceptions in terms of not only what is legal, but what is right. And that's what's important in terms of changing the culture.
I want to look at the decision. Paul, I know you have a piece on Catholic.com that we just put up yesterday or today, giving a really good legal analysis of the decision. And I don't want to discourage people from looking at it, because even a simple mind like mine was able to make its way through it. And I encourage people to read it. But how do we take a couple calls first?
Sure.
Okay, good. Let's go to Dana in Orange County, listening on the Catholic Answers Live app. Dana, first of all, thank you for using the Catholic Answers Live app. Go to the App Store and download that, those of you who don't have it. And no matter where you are, whether you're near an AM or FM tower or, on the moon, you will still be able to listen to Catholic Answers Live and all the archives of all the shows. So, Dana in Orange County, welcome to Catholic Answers Live.
Oh, thank you for having me. Yeah, the app actually does work very good because you can listen to archives. So I guess my question is related to the football coach case, and I'm not an expert on the exact facts of this case, but would it also protect religions that we don't like, Satanism, voodoo, Wicca, given the exact same circumstances, but then those were the religions as opposed to, I think he was a Christian football coach?
Yeah, great question. Thank you, Dana.
Well, I'll just say, Dana, that the facts of that case were pretty straightforward and simple. I mean, you had a coach who, after he was done with his job at school, was spending, I think, 30 seconds praying in silent prayer, basically privately. And so it shouldn't have been. I mean, honestly, the two big things that I think about when I read that case, first, I'm very surprised it was a case to begin with. I mean, the guy is just praying literally for 30 seconds after the game. So the fact that they actually went to the U.S. Supreme Court challenging his right to be able to do that is really, in my opinion, just kind of insane. But the other thing I'd say is that, the left and, you know, the other side of this issue is using the Establishment Clause, you know, in ways that serve their interests and very inconsistently. I mean, we have a case where we have a teacher in San Diego who tried to rename this school named after St. Junipero Serra, a principal, and you know, she was doing all sorts of things that clearly violate the Establishment Clause in terms of indoctrinating the students and showing hostility to the Catholic faith, and they're actually defending her actions in that case. So it's a very case by case, you know, analysis. I think that it depends on the facts of the case, but overall, I would say that, you know, this case has pretty straightforward facts that really, you know, shouldn't change the Establishment Clause analysis too much. But
Dana, hang on or listen in the second hour, because we're gonna talk more about that football case in the second hour. 888-318-7884. Register for the Catholic Answers Conference at catholicanswers.com.
You're listening to Catholic Answers Live.
Want to know more about the origins of the Catholic Church? Joe Heschmeyer explores the beginnings of Christianity in The Early Church Was the Catholic Church. Joe digs deep into the words and actions of those who lived right after the apostles to refute anti-Catholic claims of how the faith was lived back then. Order your copy of The Early Church Was the Catholic Church at shop.catholic.com or pick it up at a good Catholic bookstore. Can you defend the Church's teaching on the real presence of Christ in the Eucharist? Do you desire a deeper relationship with our Lord in the Blessed Sacrament? Join us September 22nd through 25th for the annual Catholic Answers Conference in San Diego. This year's theme is the Eucharist, I Am With You Always. Featuring all the Catholic Answers speakers and special guest Bishop Thomas Papracki, use promo code EARLY to save $50 when you register at CatholicAnswersConference.com.
Have you enrolled in the Catholic Answers School of Apologetics? Let me ask you a more important question. Do you believe as a Catholic that you have an obligation to share the Catholic faith? In fact, the Church has answered this question, and the answer is that all confirmed Catholics are obliged to share the faith. It's actually in canon law. Catholic Answers is here to help you fulfill that obligation. Our School of Apologetics courses will equip you to help all the people you come in contact with understand what the Church teaches and why. A great place to start is with all the Catholics in your life. Learn the art of apologetics from the best of the best and start sharing the gospel today. Visit schoolofapologetics.com. That's schoolofapologetics.com.
Miss a show? Make sure to catch up by downloading the podcast, available online at catholic.com.
Tomorrow on Mortal Life, the life you were meant to live.
We'll look at how the theology of the body can help you live a more abundant life.
That's tomorrow on Mortal Life, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 Central on EWTN Radio.
Now back to Catholic Answers Live.
Catholic Answers Live. Sorry, my friends. I am still a novitiate at hosting the show. Is that the right word? Novice, novitiate. And so there I was talking, and Darren was going to the break, as a professional producer would. But I was just reminding you, take advantage of the early bird rate for the Catholic Answers Conference and register before Friday at CatholicAnswersConference.com, because then the price will go up $50. To save $50, put EARLY, the code EARLY, when you register. 888-318-7884. Chris Check, sitting in for Cy Kellett, the Supreme Court abortion and religious liberty. My guests, lawyers Chuck Lemandry and Paul Jonah, two first-rate legal minds who also specialize in moral and religious liberty questions. We're talking about the Dobbs decision. Let's go. I want to talk about Dobbs in a little more detail here, Paul and Chuck. And I think actually Martha's going to help us launch the conversation here. Martha from Colorado, listening on Alexa. Welcome to Catholic Answers Live.
Thank you very much for taking my call.
Sure.
I know the justices talked about the rights of the mother and the rights of the state to protect the life of the unborn child. Did they address the rights of the child as a person under the Constitution? And if they didn't, why didn't they? And if not, is it possible that the question of the rights of the child as a person under the Constitution may come back to the court?
Yeah, great question. Go ahead, Paul.
So that's a great question, Martha. So basically, the majority opinion, there were a lot of different opinions. So the majority opinion simply said that the U.S. Constitution is silent on the question of whether a woman has a right to an abortion. There was a concurring opinion filed by Justice Kavanaugh, which said, which went a little further than that. And it was only Justice Kavanaugh. He said that the Constitution is silent both on the question of, well, it's just neutral on abortion, either side of the issue, whether there's a right to abortion, whether there's whether unborn children have the right to life. So he said the Constitution is absolutely silent on that. Some leading legal minds filed amicus briefs in the case, Robbie George and others, arguing that the 14th Amendment should establish that unborn children have the right to life, so they should not be deprived of the right to life. And that position, I think, wasn't addressed in the majority opinion. I think that's not something that's foreclosed by the majority opinion. I think that could be litigated in the future, and I think you probably will see, cases. States are going to start now defining the issue and making it clear in their states that unborn children have the right to life. And so I think that issue will come back to the U.S. Supreme Court eventually. But as to answer your question specifically, the Dobbs decision was silent on that. Some justices took a position in concurring opinions, and legal scholars think that question is still open and up for another case potentially.
Can I follow up here? And of course, both of you are welcome to answer. I guess my question would be, why not bring it up? I mean, because if I read correctly, I think Hedley Arkes had a piece in First Things in which he calls attention to this and says, if they had, then it would have moved the chip further down the board as far as how the states might react, those in particular that permit abortion. So why leave it out? Is it in the Constitution? Is it not?
Well, the Supreme Court tends to move incrementally. And
like the Catholic Church.
Yes. And Chief Justice Roberts said he would have upheld the Mississippi law that said no abortion after the first 15 weeks, but he didn't want to go so far as to strike down Roe v. Wade. What the court did in striking down Roe v. Wade was pretty monumental in and of itself, expecting them in one fell swoop to also find a constitutional right to life for preborn babies. Probably was expecting too much at this stage. In any event, it didn't happen. But I think they left the door open for it, because even in Justice Alito's majority opinion, he said what distinguishes the abortion issue, of course, is we're talking, unlike other major issues that also sprung out of the Due Process Clause of the 14th Amendment, going back to Griswold in the mid-60s with contraception, followed then by Roe v. Wade in 73, and Lawrence regarding constitutional right to intimate relations, which was about sodomy in that case in 2003, and finally Obergefell in 2015. They all come from this so-called right to substantive due process under the 14th Amendment, which gave rise to an invented right to privacy. So when you start looking at all of those issues, the court went pretty far in saying no. We're not going to allow that right to privacy. And if it doesn't exist for Roe v. Wade, it may not exist for these other issues. But also, they were not willing to go as far as saying there's personhood. They did say the life issue is in play. And we're going to see, I think, as Paul pointed out, probably coming up through the states, some will want to have a personhood recognition. And it makes sense, because some states already recognize if you kill a pregnant woman, it's a double homicide. They do recognize that the unborn fetus is a human being. And of course, science now, much more so than in 1973 with Roe v. Wade and 3D and 4D ultrasounds, you can't look at the fetus on the screen and say it's anything other than a human being. The question is, are they now going to call that human being a person with the full protection of the constitutional rights? And obviously they should. It's logical and it's moral, but whether or not the court's going to do that anytime soon remains to be seen.
Quick follow-up point, Chris, to answer your question. So I was talking to one of the lawyers from Alliance Betting Freedom that was actually involved in the case, the Dobbs case initially. And some inside baseball he was telling me was that when they drafted the cert petition to get the court to take this case.
What's a cert petition? Basically,
it's a request to the Supreme Court, you know, please hear this case.
Right.
And in that request, they didn't ask the court to overturn Roe versus Wade. All that, because they didn't have the votes, they didn't think back then. All they asked the court, the question presented to the court was, are all pre-viability bans on abortion unconstitutional? Because the court in the last case in Planned Parenthood versus Casey set this line of 24 of viability as being the standard, 24 weeks, and any bans before 24 weeks would be unconstitutional. And this was a state ban at 15 weeks. So the question before the court was very narrow. And Justice Roberts seized on this in his concurrence. He said, at first, you guys just asked us to determine if this one law was unconstitutional. Now, in your opening papers, you've switched it. Now you want us to overturn Roe versus Wade. And the lawyer explained to me that it was because of all these developments we talked about earlier with the court changing composition that they did change strategies midway through the case. So to answer your question,
That does answer my question,
yeah,
by the way.
Yeah.
And actually, I'm satisfied with that answer. Right?
Yeah.
If you're going to swing for the fence and miss, let's get a double.
Right.
Yeah. No,
right.
Seriously. 888-318-7884, 888-31-TRUTH. Thanks very much for your excellent question, Martha. 888-31-TRUTH. Folks, those of you who are queuing up on the phones here, don't get discouraged. I have these great legal minds for the full 2 hours, so we will get to your questions. Paul, you've got a piece that posted on Catholic.com, the website of Catholic Answers, yesterday or today, giving a little bit of analysis of the Dobbs decision, and maybe give us a summary there, and then contrast the decision with some of the concurring ones.
Right. So the article basically goes through, gives a little bit of background. I mean, what did Roe versus Wade establish? What did Planned Parenthood versus Casey establish? That was the case where we were all hoping in the 90s that Roe versus Wade would be struck down. And then it explains a little bit of what the majority said, when it's very straightforward. I mean, the majority opinion just explains that there's no, you know, it goes back to the history of the United States, and it shows that, in fact, you know, not only is there nothing in the Constitution that talks about abortion, but in fact, the states were all, most of the states had laws restricting abortion in significant ways. So if you look at the founding of our country, there is that, you know, there was really no basis to, you know, across the board say that there's a right to abortion. So majority opinion, really, it's mostly a stare decisis analysis. Stare decisis is the principle the court uses to, you know, maintain precedent. And it's very, very rare for a Supreme Court to undo one of its cases. It's only happened 20-something times in the last 100 years. So it really...
That is an extraordinary number, how small it is.
Right. Yeah. And most of the cases were very significant. But it's very rare. And the court did this detailed analysis, as Chuck was saying, about what the reliance interests were since the case was issued. And anyway,
what's reliance interest?
Well, for example, as you know, the court looks to what you know, when a court issues a decision, people start making decisions and relying on that decision. So, for example, the reliance interests of women who thought that they had a constitutional right to an abortion, what were those reliance interests? And the court says really not that strong, because the decision to get an abortion is normally a spontaneous decision. Whereas, for example, with same-sex marriage, an argument can be made that people are relying now, forming supposedly lifelong unions, and you know, they're relying on this decision to make major decisions. So the court did a stare decisis analysis, and the majority opinion is very sound, very well written, and Justice Alito has a solid opinion that's very similar to the draft that was leaked. Almost nothing changed. And then he responds to the dissenting judges, and he responds to Justice Roberts. And just Justice Thomas issued a concurring opinion, and he made some more controversial claims in there, including that all of the prior substantive due process decisions, as Chuck was talking about, Griswold on contraception, Obergefell on same-sex marriage, Lawrence, which basically said there was a right to sodomy, all of these decisions have a similar problem as the Roe versus Wade decision does, and that's that there's really no foundation for any of those rights in the Constitution, and all of those should be revisited, he said. No other justice signed on to that, though. And Chief Justice Roberts had probably the most disappointing and unfortunate decision. And he basically said his big thing is trying to keep the court, you know, maintain the court's integrity in his view. So he kind of tried to find a way to split the baby, so to speak. And basically what he said was, this ban on abortion in Mississippi after 15 weeks is legal, but we don't have to overturn Roe versus Wade, because what that really what that case guaranteed was the right of a woman to choose. And at 15 weeks, a woman still has the right to choose. She has 15 weeks to decide whether to get an abortion. So he said that the standard should be, so he basically would uphold a 15-week ban, but he would strike down, for example, a 6-week ban, because that wouldn't give enough time for a woman to choose. So he tried to find a novel way to keep Roe versus Wade alive. And then we had Justice Kavanaugh, who kind of was a little bit of a weaker concurrence. He had some strong points, but one of the things in his concurrence that was disappointing was that he said that he basically tried to foreclose that argument we were just talking about whether an unborn child has the right to life under the Constitution. And then the dissenting opinions are kind of wacky for lots of reasons, but that's a
short piece, my friends, is called What's the Deal with Dobbs v. Jackson, written by Paul Jonah and your colleague who
Jeff Trissel.
Yeah, Jeff. Yes. Yeah, so I recommend that's go to Catholic.com. It's right there on the front page. What is the deal with Dobbs v. Jackson? We're going to take a quick break before we do. Again, let me remind you, the early bird deadline for the Catholic Answers Conference ends this Friday at midnight. Please do not procrastinate. You can save $50 off the registration by entering the promo code EARLY for our conference on the Eucharist the end of September in San Diego. I'm going to tell you something, my friends. Everybody is fretting about inflation right now. If you've stayed in a hotel room, you've seen that even at the Hampton Inn, it's, you know, well above $200 or something. This magnificent hotel, and by the way, Hampton Inns are perfectly nice places to stay. I stay in them myself. This hotel that we have, and those of you who've been to the conference know this, the Aventine Hyatt in La Jolla there, is among the loveliest hotels in San Diego and in San Diego, and they give us an amazing room rate because of our friendly relationship with them. I think it's something like $160-$165 a night. It is a whale of a deal. So no inflation on the hotel room there. CatholicAnswersConference.com. Sign up before Friday. Enter the code EARLY. Save $50 right back after this.
Hang on. We'll be right back with more Catholic Answers Live.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects homebuyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
Do you love sharing the gospel and want to learn to be more effective? Join the St. Paul Street Evangelization Online School of Evangelization. You will learn to build bridges of trust and make disciples by befriending strangers, proclaiming the gospel, inviting people to the church, and praying with others. We'll ask for a pledge of financial support, but if you are unable to give, we'll give you a membership at no cost. Find out more and get involved today at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
The most original and exclusive Catholic content is on EWTN Radio.
My life is split between the search for the supernatural and the retelling of the credible and verifiable accounts of true instances of miracles. I think that people are inspired hearing these stories, and it bolsters people's faith to spend even just a few moments with the miraculous.
The Miracle Hunter with Michael O'Neill, Saturday afternoon, 1 Eastern, on EWTN Radio.
Catholic Answers Live, 888-318-7884. What a great time we're having in the G.K. Chesterton studio here in San Diego at the wonderful headquarters of Catholic Answers, 888-318-7884. My name is Chris Check. I am not the host of Catholic Answers Live. That job is discharged on a regular basis by the highly talented, entertaining, and just great all-around guy, Cy Kellett. He is under the weather this week, and so, yeah, you've got me. But we're doing our best, and covering for a lot of my sins are my two superb guests here today. Two really first-rate legal minds. And by the way, also great guys to be around. Really wonderful at a party. I've been to a few parties with these guys, and they are great at a party. Chuck Lemandry and Paul Jonah. And gentlemen, I think this conversation is going great. I hope you think the same. 888-318-7884. We're talking about the Supreme Court, abortion, and religious liberty. And Paul, before the break, you were summarizing the piece that you have on Catholic.com, the website of Catholic Answers, what's the deal with Dobbs v. Jackson? And I encourage our readers to go and read that. My friends, it won't take you a long time. It's not written for the legal specialist. It will make it possible for you to have an articulate conversation about what's going on and what is not going on legally with respect to this case. And also, if you go to Catholic.com, there's a pop-up right now, or a window that we put up there recently, and there are five articles up there. We call five pro-abortion arguments and how to answer them. And I choose the word answer here rather than beat. I'm not actually sure what it says on the website, but I choose the word answer here because, my friends, we're not trying to win arguments. We're trying to win souls. And a lot of families are divided right now. A lot of friendships are divided. There's a lot of anger on the social media platforms. I'm sure many of you are experiencing this yourself. Take a deep breath. Spend some time in prayer. And then take the time to inform yourself so that you can speak articulately and with charity about what is and what is not going on with respect to this decision. And Catholic Answers is at your service to provide this information to you. Again, these are easy articles to read. They will equip you. Take the time to do it. You have an obligation to. If you're a confirmed Catholic, you have an obligation to spread the faith. That's in canon law. That's in the catechism. And part of telling the truth about human life is spreading the faith. So you're obliged to do this, and Catholic Answers is making it easy for you to do. Go to Catholic.com. Okay, gentlemen. So, Paul, you mentioned a concurrent opinion from Clarence Thomas, who I love, and faithful Catholic, goes to daily mass every day. And his concurring decision raises this question, or his judgment, rather, with respect to certain recent due process decisions, Obergefell, Lawrence, and Griswold. And I got those in exactly the backwards order, I think, there. And so Griswold was a case in the 60s in Connecticut having to do with contraception and interstate commerce, maybe. I don't even know if that was even involved or how the or maybe just incorporation. That's how the court became involved. And then Lawrence, of course, sodomy, opening the door, as they said it would not, but did, to gay marriage, as you observed, Chuck, and then Obergefell, the gay marriage decision. And Thomas is saying that just as there's there's nothing in the Constitution that speaks to the question of a so-called right to abortion, there's nothing in the Constitution that speaks to a right to any of these things, and so they ought to be reviewed. Am I summarizing it correctly?
Yeah, that's pretty much right. Yeah.
I'll take pretty much. So, what are the implications here?
Go ahead.
Well, what they did in Roe v. Wade was they found a right that was not anywhere articulated in the Constitution, which is the right to privacy. And they even talked about a penumbra, like that glow that emanates around the moon, is where they pulled this out of the Constitution. It really was a smoke and mirrors thing. What they've done now with Dobbs is they've taken, as I'm thinking about it, talking about it, that particular right to abortion out of that privacy bucket. But what you have Thomas doing is saying the whole bucket has to go, because that bucket, which is the right to privacy, in which they put in contraception first and then sodomy and then same-sex marriage, it's nowhere in the Constitution to allow that. So basically the rationale undergirding the Dobbs decision would apply to all these other cases. Now, again, the majority, with the draft being written by Justice Alito, said, no, right now we're just talking about abortion because it is tied to life, specifically. although that doesn't change the rationale that there is no constitutional right to privacy and there is no due process right under the 14th Amendment for the reasons Paul mentioned. One, again, it's nowhere in the Constitution, and two, it's nowhere in the history and traditions of the United States. In fact, the history and traditions are just the opposite, because abortion was never legal. But likewise, sodomy was never legal in any of the 13 colonies or traditionally any of the states up until the Lawrence decision, or maybe before that some states allowed it, but traditionally it was outlawed. And of course, same-sex marriage was not legal in any state until the United States Supreme Court ruled in 2015 there's a constitutional right, at which time they struck down 31 state constitutional amendments. So it would seem to me that the same rationale could be used. Now, again, I don't want to jump the gun. There was, between the time of the Lawrence decision in 2003, and same, which allowed, again, constitutional right to sodomy, and the Obergefell decision in 2015, it was a 12 years. But in the span of the lifetime of the country, and in terms of the impact on the culture, 12 years is really not that long. So,
although the impact has been pretty significant.
The impact has been dramatic. And when I did the 3-CD set for Catholic Answers on same-sex marriage and religious liberty in 2011, we predicted all the things that are happening, would happen in terms of people, first of all, in the wedding industry, the bakers, the photographers, people who did the invitations would all come under fire, and then the broader Christian community, which is now half the cases we're getting that are people that are being targeted for their sincerely held religious beliefs about marriage and sexual morality when it comes to the homosexual and transgender agendas. It's coming faster and more furiously than we anticipated when we predicted in 2011. These are the kinds of problems that would arise. And although we talked about...
Oh, we're already into all the transgender
exactly.
stuff now.
We talked about how uncoupling gender from marriage, and Archbishop Corleone, who was an auxiliary bishop in San Diego at the time, said that. This is not just an attack on marriage, it's an attack on gender. And from our fundamental Catholic Christian perspective, it's probably one of the most diabolical attacks, because Satan always wanted to interfere with God's relationship with man, insinuate himself between us from the time of the Garden of Eden. And by destroying the concept of gender, how do we now relate to God as a loving father, which is how he chooses to reveal himself to us, let alone to each other as man and woman, husband and wife? And what does it do to our fundamental image of the church as Christ is a bridegroom and the church is a bride? It throws all of that into potential chaos in people's minds. So it is particularly devastating from a spiritual perspective, and obviously we're now seeing the cultural consequences as a result.
888-318-7884, 888-31-TRUTH. Paul, Ben, John, hang on. We will get to your questions, if not in this first hour, in the second hour. So the optimist would say, maybe some of these due process cases are going to get another look, and 31 laws support defining marriage or constitutional amendments, such as there is here still in California, will be brought back into force. What is the, and I don't think we're going to get to this, and we'll kind of pick it up when we start the second hour here, but let's get started. What is the pessimist saying right now? How, this has been a significant gain, but how fragile is the gain? Is already we've seen a couple of state judges, I think, that have put an abeyance or a hold or whatever the word is on, for example, in Texas, on the bans on abortion, and you know that's probably just trying to buy some time. I don't know that will hold, but nonetheless, I guess maybe you could answer the question this way as well. We'll hold this thought. This is what we're going to start the second hour with. We think of the question in two ways. How fragile is this gain? There's cultural implications there. How easily could it be reversed? Different justice appointments. And then maybe a way to answer the question or think about the question is, if you were on the other side of this thing, if you were a legal mind representing, you know, the dark side on this one, What sort of legal tactics, cultural tactics, might you be thinking about? 888-318-7884. Chris Check sitting in for Cy Kellett. Supreme Court, abortion, religious liberty. Chuck Lemandry, Paul Jonah. Back with one more hour right after this.